Reactor is stoked, and we are live. Good morning, folks, and welcome to this special edition of the Banff Podcast Indie Creator Spotlight. As always, this is Walt, and I am the head ink slinger over at Hazard Studio, and today we have two luminaries of fiction that we're going to try not to molest too much, but hopefully get you to know as much as possible, because they are exploding onto the scene quickly. And you guys have a media blitz going on, from what I understand. So first, we're going to talk, start from my left to my right. We are going to go with John Delarose. Good morning.
Hey, how's it going? I don't think anybody's used the word luminary for me before, and I kind of like that. I'll go with it.
Yeah. It fits nicely on a business card, especially if you use a nice font. And beside him, a titan of fiction, who has also, if I'm not mistaken, won the Dragon Award. We have Mr. Richard Fox.
Hello, thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much for coming. We appreciate it. So, gentlemen, I usually start this off with a very serious question, and it is a question that will probably define humanity going forward. We'll start with John. Comic book store or spinner rack?
Comic book store, 100%.
Really? Really?
Yeah. So I think a spinner rack is probably healthier for the business overall, but I like the experience of the comic book store.
And did you first encounter comics through the comic book store?
Neither. Neither spinner rack or comic book store, actually. Really? I got a subscription given to me by my aunt for Christmas to Amazing Spider-Man when I was like 9.
I want this, aunt. This is not fair. Oh, my goodness. And has it been a lifelong obsession with Spider-Man from there?
Yeah, until they tragically canceled the character when they made Peter Parker do a deal with the devil and then wipe out his existence in 2010 or whatever it was. I quit then.
Yeah, that was a tough read. Did you eventually catch any of the Dan Slott stuff?
I read a little bit of it, but I mean, I was so livid by that. I couldn't do it. I mean, it just, that whole, you know, I mean, I'd seen it. I knew they had their like illusion of change thing that they talk about this, like how they don't actually try to develop things. They try to somewhat keep them stagnant in a way, but give you an illusion that they're progressing as characters. And, you know, as I, you know, at the same time, I was kind of like getting my writing chops down, when that was happening. So I'm like, sitting there going, I could never get away with this as a writer, like not actually developing a character or not doing good character work. I mean, it would be, you know, people would tell me, would just reject my stories, right?
Right.
So at that point, it just kind of, I couldn't do it anymore. So I went to indies full time at that point, pretty much.
Rock on. Richard, how did you first encounter comic books? Spinner Rack, comic book store?
It was Spinner Rack. It was Spinner Rack at the grocery stores in the 1980s and 90s. And so it was almost all Marvel back then, with the occasional graphic novel I would pick up at the bookstore. And back in the 90s, my family moved overseas to Japan to live on an Air Force base. And I was really into X-Men at the time. And I remember driving from base to base, because the way it is on Okinawa is it does little bases all over the place. And for whatever reason, the spinner racks always have different comics.
That's not fair.
I think what it was is that the sailors and marines had their favorites, and like, you know, if some sailor didn't care for X-Force, that one would be available by the time I got there. So I remember driving from base to base looking for Age of Apocalypse comics when Marvel did that back in the mid-90s.
Oh my goodness. Did you get at least a sample some of the local cuisine on the way from base to base?
Yeah, you know, Okinawan food's pretty good, you don't think this, but the Japanese love their curry, so they got a pretty good curry going on down there.
Hi, so desu ne. Now, what was the title that was your gateway drug?
It was absolutely Wolverine.
Really?
It's like the Weapon X graphic novel is one of the favorite things, the best thing I've ever read. And I love it. And either I don't know what the hell's going on nowadays, but you know, Wolverine was always my favorite.
Wolverine reads like a soap opera. I think they're bringing him back from the dead one more time. So
why not?
Yes.
In Marvel, there's no pearly gates. It's a revolving door.
I like that. That's awesome. So now going into the love of comics, you guys had mentioned, or rather John had mentioned, now he's almost exclusively reading indies. Richard, are you reading indies as well?
A little bit when I can find it. I mean, a few weeks ago, I was in Barnes & Noble looking through the graphic novel section, and it was kind of like, what on earth has happened? A little bit when I was looking through, it was just comics were almost unrecognizable compared to what I grew up on, you know, which was your mid-90s foil, holograph cover, everything.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's like, I look at it, I'm like, what the hell happened to Iceman? And it's like, you know, that kind of thing is going on now when I look at the comics.
Well, the question with Iceman is, which one?
What one? Oh, man. I've been that far out of the loop.
It's a shame. Yeah, it's a thing. How about you, John? What kind of indies are you checking out these days, other than the Flying Sparks comic?
Yeah, Flying Sparks was the one I just wrapped up to over $30,000. So thank you for everybody who backed that. That's amazing. I'd say my favorite writer right now in the comics scene is Matt Kint. He's most popular and known for a comic called Mind Management. And that it's just a head trip. That thing is, you know, just creatively, I wish I could do that. I don't think I have the chops to do something like that. I'm much more of a, like a pulp writer kind of guy that's pretty straightforward. But it's just beautiful stuff. I'm also liking... let's see. I just finished up reading. I don't know if this counts as indie. It's Chuck Dixon's Air Boy. Yeah. It was from Eclipse Comics in the 80s and got reprinted by IDW in these like big omnibuses. And I just read the whole thing. And Air Boy was a Golden Age superhero that Chuck sort of reimagined as like, you know, his son in the 80s. And it's way over the top, ridiculous. You have this guy just like going around flying around in fighter jets, just like, you know, blasting the bad guys, and it's just so cool.
So that's not a thing that everybody does with fighter jets? I mean, I thought that was like Saturday.
You know, I haven't had coffee, so my phrasing might be a little off this morning. But yeah, I mean, I don't see a lot of that going on in comics. Like, I mean, I at least these days, like I know there used to be a lot of war story books and all that, you know, back in the EC days and all that, but that tended to go away. And I like that sort of thing.
Right on, right on. So you guys are looking for more mil SF in comics, or are you, or just whatever tickles your fancy, and that's what you pick up?
Is there other mil SF in comics right now? Because I've looked around, and it's really hard to find any.
The indie scene, there's some, and then there's some good stuff being done on the science fiction realm, as far as not so much mil sci-fi, but almost like a genre mashup. You have Salvagers by Bob Sally, and that's somebody sitting out in the middle of space in a space garbage truck, and somebody blows up the Death Star, and they say, well, who the hell's going to clean up this shit? And then, you know, they go in and clean up. So
that sounds like my alley for sure.
Yeah, it's very, very good. And he's also an indie guy. So, you know, you get that Star Wars feel without the Star Wars vibe. And then you get Judas Breed is also another fantastic comic. It's a love letter to aliens. Got that gritty mil SF vibe going on in the background. So there's a lot of good stuff in indie comics. A lot of people are branching away from the standard superheroes and going into different genres to kind of play around and see what they can get away with. And with indie, you know, who's going to tell you no? And is that why you got into indie publishing of comics, John? So that nobody could tell you no, you could tell the type of
stuff? Yeah, that's definitely been my MO. I started... kind of making Flying Sparks actually back in 2012. So this has been a project that's been going for a long time, and I did it on the side. So I started working for a game company at the time, which was who was that? Alderaan Entertainment for their Doomtown Reloaded, which was a subsidiary of the Deadlands RPG, if you're familiar with that. And so I did a lot of story work for them and art boarding, basically. You know, so we'd come out with different cards, and I'd say, you know, I want a cowboy with samurai swords in the background, with a little bit of Saturday morning stubble, you know, just because he's probably hasn't shaved in a day or two here, and that'd make a good cowboy picture, right? And that's kind of what I did for Doomtown. So it was natural to kind of do comics with that, as I was working on that from the description side. Flying Spark. So I kind of did it from like, I would do a page or two a week or a month, just like I'd set aside money from my paycheck, like until I had a complete story going on. And because comics are very expensive to make if you're not an artist yourself.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, if you think about it, the minimum that you're going to get away with quality art, and if you use all the bells and whistles, like a good letterer, colorist, 7,000 minimum American. So I mean, the fact that you guys are rocking 30,000 on Sparks and you're over halfway funded on Ember War, you know, that speaks volumes. I mean, you guys are doing very well so far. But I'd like to, before we get into that part of the pool, we obviously have two people who were passionate about comics at one point. What kind of drove you toward writing fiction versus just comics?
Richard, well, I'll let you start.
For me, it was, I started off with writing screenplays back when I first got that writing itch. And I wrote a screenplay about the Red Baron, which did well in a couple contests. And it got enough attention for some producer in Hollywood to say never, because it's about a bad guy, the Red Baron being a World War One fighter pilot. So I was like, huh. And then that entire learning experience taught me that if you think a script that you write will eventually somehow pay you, you're in for a long, hard road, which probably won't work out. And then one day at work, I found a blog by Joe Conrath, where he laid out how it's possible to be an indie writer nowadays. And he just laid it out. This is all the things you need. This is how much it costs. And this is how it works on Amazon. I was like, huh, well, okay then. I'll give that a shot. So and writing, you know, putting out a novel is a good deal less expensive than a single issue of a comic book. So you could put as much or as little money into writing a novel as you want. I mean, you could just have your cousin Frank do the editing for you, and then like some guy. You just find some clip art somewhere, slap a cover on that, put that on there, and then boom, it's on Amazon, and you can think yourself an author. But you know, it's I have like three or four different editors and a pool of artists who do cover art for me, so it's a bit more of a production when it comes to putting a novel together. Not nearly as much as it comes to putting a comic book together, as I've learned. It's a whole other beast. So
yeah, it's huge. It's huge. And when you talk to guys like Sean Isaacs, who's a friend of our show, you know, when you take that jump from indie to professional, full-time work, guaranteed employment, their workload is so crazy that trying to do stuff on the side is almost impossible for them, because the 12 to 14 hour turnaround on a single page. So, I mean, yeah, it's huge. How about you, John? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I started with prose fiction. So I was in high school and I just started dabbling in a notebook basically. And comics came around, you know, I started scripting comics around 2010 to 2012, that time and medicine with it. I liked comics a lot because I could get stories out a lot faster than I could with prose, because prose, you know, it especially when you're first starting. I mean, it took me years to finish my first novels. Now it takes me like a month and a half. But I'm pretty quick. I think Richard's faster than me though, which is I strive to be him. But so I've always kind of just done both in tandem and never really, you know, wanted to be one or the other. I have my next prose novel coming out, I think this week. It'll be called The Fight for Rizlandia. It's my trilogy, my steampunk trilogy, which has done very well for me. The first book's for Steaming Country, if folks want to check it out.
Nice, nice. We're going to put links for all of this in the show notes. So if people want to get crazy and hit that buy now button all over the place, it'll be fantastic. So Richard, when you were at West Point, correct?
That's right. Graduated 2001.
So, were there spinner racks in West Point, or did like comics have to go away for a while?
We had a mail room, and we had enough internet back then. I could just go to Marvel.com and say, send me these books every month. And so every month I would get, you know, just that delivery, in the mail room. So, and then, yeah, I ended up meeting one of my best friends for a long time because he saw me take a copy of X-Force out of my mailbox. He's like, can I borrow that when you're done? I'm like, yeah, come by my room later. And 25 years later, we're still talking to each other. So
that's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Now, John, you had just said also that you started with prose and got into writing comics. Was the transition from prose to comics a difficult experience? Richard had said that he had written screenplays. So when you went to scripting versus just writing, how did your process change?
It was interesting. I got this book. It was J. Michael Straczynski's Guide to Script Writing. And I sort of started messing with him from there. And actually talking to Richard offline, he goes, I have that book on my bookshelf. I think it's influenced a lot of people, which is kind of cool. It's a very different process, and you have to really think about things. I think what I trained myself to do early on, which is different, is like, you really want to confine yourself to a certain amount of pages. Like, I know in indie you don't have to do this, but you know, I still try to keep all my stuff like 24 page issue installments, so that, you know, if one of the publishers picks it up or something like that later down the line and wants to reprint it or whatever, they have a nice digestible, standard way. Standard's a better word. Standard way to do it. And so confining things to that sort of space in a page count was probably the biggest strange element to it, because prose you can kind of just keep going for as long as you feel like.
Right on. Absolutely cool. Well, I'd like to start transitioning into a mysterious message on a cell phone and how you guys got tangled together. The Ember War is one of those pieces of fiction that when you're looking for indie guys, it's usually one of the ones that you hear the most. Number one, the name of the series is very easy, and it's very memorable. You know, we always remember something with war in it, and the word Ember is very evocative. So very, very cool title. Kudos for the choice on that. But it's when Amazon starts recommending things, it's one of the things that pops up into a variety of feeds. How did you guys get linked up, and what was the process like in the beginning? Was it awkward, easy? How did that work out?
Richie, you wanna start, or you want me to start?
You go ahead. This one, I think I answered this first question. Go ahead.
Sure. We actually got linked up because of the Dragon Awards. I think I added Richard on Facebook because we were both nominated for our military science fiction books in 2017. And I was kind of like, who's this Richard Fox guy at the time? I thought I was going to be sailed to a victory for the Dragon Award, and then Richard trounced me. So I'm like, geez, I guess I better read this guy's books. So I bought the Ember War immediately, and then I actually stopped my other reading because, you know, just seemed like an interesting, I don't know, the cover and description just seemed interesting enough that I just like moved it to the stack, top of the stack immediately. And I was not disappointed whatsoever. The book is just like a pure action-packed, wonderful adventure. And I told Richard right away, I said, this reads like a movie. And Richard goes, well, why, yes, I started in screenwriting. This is kind of the way I write. And I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. And, you know, eventually we just started talking and hitting it off. We had a lot in common. And, you know, a couple months down the line, it's like, well, have you ever thought about making this into a comic? What did you say to that, Richard?
I said, I would love to be a comic, but I have no idea how to do it.
And I said, well, I know how to do it. Would you like to do it?
I got to know, was there a lot of Captain Morgan's poses going on during this whole exchange? Because this sounds pretty epic.
it was more as like, huh, I've got chocolate. He's got this peanut butter thing.
That's awesome. Oh my goodness, that's fantastic. Yeah,
it was actually really, it was just like everything just went really smoothly until you know, we started getting art, and you know, it, and the only non-smooth thing about the art is it just comes in a lot slower than I think Richard thought in the process. Like, comic art takes a long time for the most part, and the people who work at Marvel and DC who can do it out like month after month after month after month, I mean, they're paid and they're at these companies because they are literally the only people in the world who can like keep that level up at that, like, you know, 20 pages, 25 pages per month rate, because that it's pretty insane as an artist to go at that speed.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of times too, they're working 3 to 5 issues ahead.
Yeah.
So if they don't have something nailed down and there's a stoppage, you see that, what was it? Civil War II, Marvel Civil War II. A bunch of the books had to come out of order because the art wasn't being turned in on time.
Yeah, that was painful for the storyline because of that. You're sitting there reading it going, what?
Luckily, you don't get that in fiction. I mean, that would be kind of weird, release book 7 before book 4.
I suppose if we had like multiple authors and we were like juggling books or whatever, well, but you just hold off, book 7, you know, so I don't know.
Yeah, the trials and tribulations of the comics industry.
Yeah.
So with Ember War on Kickstarter, you guys have first of all your cover. All right, let me back up. I'm getting all excited and getting ahead of myself. Who's doing the art on this?
Jethro Morales. Jethro Morales actually, you know, he's got major chops in major history. So he's worked for Image Comics on Hack Slash. He's worked with Dynamite on Green Hornet. He did a run, and Deja Thoris of Mars was his kind of science fiction run. And I've been loving actually the Dynamite, Green Hornet and Deja Thoris stuff over time. I think they've done a really good job with those properties. So so Jethro and I have kind of been, this has kind of been like, Flying Sparks had been a side gig for several years, because he's like, I could do a page or two a month or whatever on top of my other stuff. And we just got to know each other over years. And I said, okay, Jethro, do you want to do a full 120 page epic graphic novel? Like, you know, can you fit this into your schedule? And it worked out timing wise. And so we got him.
Right on. And Richard, what have you been thinking about the art?
Oh, it's great. And it's also so strange to see, you know, one of my characters who you've lived in my head for so long. And then, you know, you'll get glimpses of them with the cover art for my novels. And it's always, I've always been allowed for that to change just a little bit. And it's more, you know, I never said like, you know, this is exactly how many feet tall he is, et cetera, et cetera. But now it's with comics, it's like, okay, well, how tall is he? what color is this? Ooh, that's a good question. And it's like, you know, how big is this cannon? Like, well, okay. And so it's a little, you know, when it's just in your mind's eye, it's one thing. And it can mute a little bit. But now once it's in comics, it's all of a sudden, it's like, it's going to stay that way. You know, and if you change things, people are going to notice and people are going to ask why. So
now my question is it exciting for you as an author who spends so much time probably agonizing over word choice and description to see, is it kind of a rush to see a comic book page and instead of this visceral explanation of an explosion, just giant splash letters that say, boom, what is that like for you?
You know, I accept that as being part of the medium, and like I would never write, you know, giant caps boom for free, but it's, you know, like there's one part in the Ember War where the characters show up in Phoenix and the city is abandoned or it's a ghost town and buildings are half destroyed and no one understands what's going on here, and there's this great bit that Morales drew where you have all these, you know, Space Marines who are, you know, trying to look confident, and then you have one character, her name is Stacy, who is not confident at all, and you can just see that in her body language about how not, you know, how afraid she is. I'm like, yeah, there you go. They have accomplished, you know, what I put in the book there. So it was really great to see that.
Right on. Now everybody loves power armor. So when you started seeing armor hit on the screen, you know, with jump jets and stuff like that, how did that feel?
Oh, it was good, and it's also it's kind of like sometimes I'm thinking like, why didn't I think of this earlier? And, you know, be like when the Jets open up on the back of the guy's legs, like, okay, why didn't I put this a little earlier? Why didn't I have it more on his feet? And you know, it gets me thinking like, you know, should I have a more specific Bible about how exactly everything works, or it's art, just let it go? And it's a lot easier if you just say it's art, let it go, just letting people enjoy it. You know, that's kind of a more healthy way to look at things.
Right on. John, with the art coming in, and you said that you had gone out after the con and after the awards, and you picked up Ember War. Did the art match what you had in your head? So with you know, with Richard, he has his image of it, but with your image of it painted in your head, how did the art come out for you?
Yeah, I've been working with Jethro for so long. You know, I kind of, you know, visualize things like I thought he would draw it. And so, yeah, it comes out very close to what I think. I mean, the only things, you know, we had to cut a couple like talky scenes because that doesn't play well in comics, and kind of gloss over some of that stuff and just drive it straight towards the action, which is not hard to do with the Ember War for anybody who's read it. I mean, there's not, I'm only saying a couple scenes out of the whole book. It's pretty good. I think everything turned out exactly how I liked it.
Right on, right on. He seems to have a really a crisp style. I like his facial features. He seems to be able to even in thumbnail where you're not getting as much detail because you're trying to pack a lot into the scene. On your Indiegogo page, you have that top page where you have all of the Space Marines standing around. You can see everybody's looks, and you can see everybody's kind of what they're thinking. So he does a very good job. I like the bottom page where he's just inked a pencil page. Now, is he doing his own inking, or you have your own inker as well?
That bottom page is actually going to be the cover for the book, and that's not by Jethro. That's by Graham Nolan, who's been, you know, he was the Batman artist for a couple decades.
Oh, and, right on.
Yeah. And the creator of Bane. So I've been, the coolest part of the last several months is I've been able to like become friends with a lot of my heroes growing up. Graham's one of them. Graham's a great guy, and Graham is ripped. The dude is like 60 years old, and he like has this gym regimen. And he's like a bodybuilder almost. It's you know, I strive to be Graham when I grow up.
that's what I always heard about West Point graduates. They were always ripped and Adonis-like. Can you shed any light on that, Richard?
It goes away after with age.
I don't believe it. I'm not gonna buy it. I think you're pulling my leg. So for those not familiar, can we have a quick elevator pitch of what the Ember War is about? I mean, you have a good description of it on the Indiegogo page, but let's whet people's appetite. What can you give to me?
The Ember War is a military science fiction adventure where Earth survives at the edge of a knife following an alien invasion. An invasion no one was prepared for, and only one person knows how to fight. A young scientist named Mark Ibarra, who made a probe, and together he has to put together a plan to defeat the Zaros and save what little remains of humanity.
Nice. Nice. So all the bells and whistles are there. Protagonist with a knowledge of how to win. I'm sure you got the plucky troopers who are trying to rise to the occasion. What other kinds of like staples of science fiction can we expect out of the Ember War?
When I first envisioned it, it was. I thought, I'm just going to do Michael Bay with better dialogue.
That is fantastic.
Oh. Yeah. I think there's a lot of like Battlestar Galactica feel to it almost, because you don't have like a so far in the future technology level that it's like, you know, unrelatable. You kind of have a lot of like sort of the day to day stuff that feels kind of the same. You have that like overwhelming odds of like, you know, especially in this one with the Zaros drones, you know, it almost feels like, you know, Cylon soldiers or robot soldiers attacking, but in a different way. So, you know, I think that's a pretty good comparison. I think it's a little more, I would say it's less bleak. I don't feel as hopeless when reading The Ember War. I feel like, you know, even though it's insurmountable odds, you know, we're going to go kick some butt and take some names. And that's kind of the difference, I guess.
Right on. Now, you guys had said that earlier that you cut out a little dialogue for the flow and feel of comics. Was there anything added that is in the comics that doesn't appear in the books? Ooh, I can hear the wheels turning.
Yeah, nothing springs to mind for like, well, we got to have this scene to cover these other four. Nothing like that's coming up. Yeah,
we changed one scene in issue four to be different characters, and so there's a couple, you know. But I don't think the characters change any of their development or anything like that. Like I add a couple of jokes from Standish, right? You actually added a couple of jokes from Standish too. But that's for comic relief and humor's sake. It's not going to change the characters or anything.
Right on. Now, right now we're sitting at 13,333. Can you go through some of the tiers and tell what people can expect? I mean, some of them are self-explanatory. You know, you got the issue one and stuff like that. So with the lower tiers, you get a single issue, and then with higher tiers, you get the full graphic novel. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So basically, I mean, we wanted to give a lot. We wanted, you know, this is a full book, a full novel. So we couldn't do this without, you know, 120 pages worth of content. And that's going to be the difference between us and a lot of the crowdfunds out there. A lot of comic book crowdfunds are just for, you know, a single issue or whatnot. And this is going to be a book that's like this thick. And if we end up hitting our stretch goal, it's going to be 150 pages. So we've got that all scripted out and ready to go. As there's a Coda short story by Richard called Iron Hearts, which we've also adapted. So we're just trying to provide a lot of value. So basically the first issue at $4 is, you know, it's a $3.99 Marvel comic for 24 pages in digital form, right? So we wanted to give exact value that you'd be getting from like one of the big companies with professional art, with all that. And you can just check it out if you have any, you know, I'm hoping you'll trust us enough for the whole book. But if you just want to check it out, that's it. We have Richard's ebook at $5. So if you want to check out Richard's story, and you can get that right away as soon as this closes out. We'll actually be delivering issue one and the ebook to everybody as soon as it both are already done. So those will come out right away. At 20, we have the full comic, and the reason that's 20 for digital is, again, that's $3.99 comics, 120 pages is about 5 comics. So you're talking about $4 times 5 comics. So at digital, you have exactly what you get on the stand there. Now, our printing costs are not what digital are, you know, for Marvel, because Marvel runs, you know, hundreds of thousands of books every month. They have deals to get their print costs down to pretty much nothing. Our reality is a little different. So we have, if you want a print physical edition, that'll be at $35, and that basically covers our print costs. You know, the amount that's kind of covering the art and going to us stays the same, whether it's a print or whether it's a digital version. But we've also got a lot of cool items for collectors, because I know Richard's got a lot of fans. So we've got a poster with that beautiful art by Graham Nolan will be on there. We've got a t-shirt with that art, same art. And then Richard developed some challenge coins. Richard, will you talk about challenge coins for a second?
Sure. Challenge coins are a military tradition, and normally they're given out by a commander or a top NCO from a unit who looks and sees this, says, hey, this person's done good, and they don't want to do the paperwork of giving you a medal. So they give you a challenge coin. And with these coins is the unit coin, and you see them normally at captain, or excuse me, company above level. And the higher it is, the more prestigious it is, the more, you know, awesome you are. Like, you know, if that 3-star general walks around and sees some specialist doing a great job, he'll go over, hey, specialist, you're doing a great job, here's a challenge coin. And then that specialist gets to go, wow, I'm awesome. Look what I look like. And then, you know, if you're in a unit and, you know, if you've got a challenge coin and you see someone else, and you're at a bar and you see someone else who, you know, has that same challenge coin, you can go over, take your coin out, whack it on the bar. And if they don't have that same coin, they owe you a drink. And if they do have it, you owe them a drink. So there's always beer involved. So no one complains.
So, in some of the in some of the other universes out there, there's other challenge coins I've heard. Who wins? I mean, if you drop an Ember War challenge coin, that's just game over, right?
I would say we're the best challenge coin. I mean, it has to be.
What's it got on it?
I modeled it after in the books. The Breitenfeld is part of the Atlantic Union Navy, so I said, okay, we're going to have, you know, the front side is the ship, and the back side is the seal of the Atlantic Union Navy, which is this, which was a response to the Chinese during World War III. So it's all backstory.
There. Right on. So
if you get that, and like, you know, if you know your book, you're like, oh, what's the Atlantic Union? You're not just doing, you know, just Ember War or something. It's more about being in that unit.
That's fantastic. The with some of these tiers, like the $25 tier that has the shirt, or $25 that has the challenge coin, does that also include copies of the book, or that's just for that particular item?
Just that item. So those are actually going to be shipped from different locations than the books. Just based on how fulfillment's going, you know, it's hard to combine that stuff. Now, we wanted to help people who are going to buy everything. So if you go up to like the Standish special, that's pretty much going to be your everything tier. So we combine shipping on that, just like, because if people want to support us at that level, we want to try to help them out a little bit. But logistics wise, you know, we're going to have different shipping costs for these different items. So it is what it is on the lower tiers. Also at the higher tiers, we have the illustrated Ember War, which we're going to take basically panels from the comics and do this like nice hardbound edition of the Ember War, and sort of like you get with illustrated books, you'll have a sort of illustrated flow of the novel, and that's going to be a big nice collector's item for Richard Fox fans.
Oh, that's sexy.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's, I might have to dig into that a little bit.
We've limited that one to 250 too, so it's going to be cool. And then at 500, I actually coaxed Richard. I said, dude, you have a lot of fans of your books here, so let's do everything, and let's give like a signed set of the entire Ember War series. And Richard's like, oh man, that's a lot of books to ship and all that. And I'm like, you got to do it, dude. it was not that hard of a sell. So he put that up there at 500, which, you know, it's very good value if you want all the books. If you do the math on that, you're actually coming out pretty ahead.
Nice.
And then we've got a couple high tiers, which you can become a red shirt in one of Richard's upcoming novels, and you can become a red shirt in the graphic novel. So we will, for people who don't know what red shirts are, that your name will get in the novel basically, and then you'll die a horrible death.
<That's>
and.
Great.
And as far as graphic novel, you actually get your likeness in there. So we actually work with artists and have them draw somebody, which is a very cool thing.
Right on. I've had my head bitten off in a comic book by an alien. So yeah.
Really? Which book?
It's not out yet. Okay. But it's the one I was talking about earlier, Judas Breed. So the gentleman who writes it is fantastic, and he's amazing with his fans. It's just one of those things where, you know, support gets its reward. So, very, very cool. But Ken Brown, amazing, amazing dude. If you search for him on Facebook, he's always willing to engage. But yeah, so I'm going to get chased by an alien and have my head bitten off, because, you know, why wouldn't you? Yeah, Marvel's not going to do it to me with Venom, so I'm going to take what I can get. So going down the Kickstarter, I mean the Indiegogo page, we have a good amount of information, but not too overwhelming. But one of the things that stands out there is this logo for Arkhaven Comics. Can you tell us a bit about Arkhaven and why you decided to publish with them?
Yeah, Arkhaven is a subsidiary basically of Castalia House, who's been publishing science fiction and a lot of military science fiction. They're, you know, that group's big military science fiction fans for a long time. So they started with the Jerry Pournelle's There Will Be War anthology series, which is the best anthology series, I gotta say. I mean, I was not in it, but as a fan, you know, Jerry Pournelle just really defined the genre with Larry Niven, and it's just, you know, wrote some beautiful stuff, and he edited some beautiful stuff in these anthologies. Also got people like B.V. Larson, a big time military science fiction guy, working over there. Nick Cole from Galaxy's Edge publishes some of his books over there. Yeah. big Nick Cole fan and friend. He's a great guy. And so, you know, it was just kind of natural to hook up as this comic imprint started. You know, as Arkhaven's come out with a bunch of books by Chuck Dixon, the co-creator of Bane, who that's actually how I got hooked up with Graham Nolan, was through Chuck. Just a lot of our friends here's over there, and we start talking to them, and they actually are really helping us out with the promotion and really helping us out with the printing. And they've been fantastic to work with all along. Just have only wonderful things to say about that company.
Right on. So when this explodes, because you guys still have a month left, and you're it looks like you're trending on smashing this through the roof. This obviously covers the first novel. Could we hope to see the second novel in less than a year? I mean, what kind of plans have you guys made?
Well, I'm all for having every single Ember War book turned into a graphic novel. And it's just the plan for the future would be to have not one artist and letterer going at one time, but, you know, two or three to get, you know, to the point where we have two or three graphic novels coming out during the course of a year. And but I would love to have it to the point where it's just individual issues are hitting bookstore shelves every single month. But that's, you know, that's going to take a long time to ramp up. So we're still getting there. However, I think, you know, the plan is for more graphic novels to come out every single year.
That's fantastic. Now, do you guys, does Arkhaven push through Diamond? So will you be able to get some distribution out there?
Arkhaven is working with a second distributor who's a worldwide book distributor, who's a big book distributor.
Yes.
And they're working with them, and part of their strategy is to compete with Diamond. So, you know, if people are, people who are familiar with the comic book industry are like, as soon as you hear this, you're like, yes.
Yes.
For those who aren't familiar with this sort of thing, Diamond's been a monopoly, just dominated the comic industry for decades. And, you know, there's just been no way to break through that. And they do their things. If you've run a comic shop, I've run a comic shop before myself. There's major problems with them. I can tell you that right now. I don't want to go into it for too much, but there's major problem. There always are with monopolies.
Just think happy thoughts.
So my happy thoughts are this major book like novel distributor who goes into bookstores and things like that. It really wants to compete and really wants to break into comic shops, and so they're doing a lot with Arkhaven directly. I think they've even set it up so that they have free shipping if you're in England. Of all Arkhaven comic books at this point.
Nice.
And they're working on that for the rest of Europe and America, and they're working on breaking into comic shops and things like that too. So this is the pioneering of the internet age of comics, I think.
That's fantastic. Wow, that was a weird audio pop. Question coming in from the Ethernets. They want to know if John, you'll be adapting any of your steampunk stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I want to. So right now, definitely way focused on the Ember War, and there's a lot of books to come out with on this, so I'm not sure what the timing of that will be. But I steampunk's such a beautiful aesthetic. I got to find, like, the right artist to do that. And I have not, like, you know, I like Jethro. I need a certain feel for the steampunk thing, and I got to come up with that, and I don't have time to, like, do a big artist search right now, but it's definitely in the back of my head.
Right on. Richard, any plans on adapting any other properties?
You know, right now I'm sitting on this mountain of Ember War universe books that need to come out. So, and they're just coming down kind of like one pebble at a time off the mountain. So, and it's, I just want John, you know, John and I, we're gonna get these books out. And then I wrote one kind of young adult space opera book called The Queen of Cydonia, which I think would do wonderful as a comic. However, you know, you got to find that artist, and I'm not going to go to John and say, hey, let's do this too. No, let's just focus on the Ember War for now. So it's more just focusing on getting the Ember War out is for me.
So The Queen of Cydonia is not out yet for purchase as far as
novel? Can get The Queen of Cydonia on audio and ebook and paperback if you like it. So that's available now. But as far as the comic goes, that might happen someday. But it's we're more just going to focus on getting the board done first.
Because young adult does very well in comics. So, I mean, that's like the golden goose to target that audience and hook them. So if you have that out there, that's something to chase. So fantastic. And now I have something else to recommend to my nephew. Cool deal.
Beautiful.
So with us winding down at the bottom of the hour, what else would you guys like to throw out there real quick, just into the void? Ember War, non-Ember War. What is there anything you'd like your fans or the people who follow you to know?
Be excellent to each other. Party on, dudes.
Yes! Fantastic. Richard.
You know, the Ember War, it's there for people who want a space action story. And you just want a space action story. You're going to... It's there to entertain you. It's not there to wag a finger or moralize at you. It's not there to try to convince you that some of the way of thinking is wrong. No, it's just there to entertain you. So if you take a look at that, you can know you can pick this book up, sit down with it for an evening, and at the end go, that was great. I want another one. So that's the whole point of the that's what the Ember War is going for.
Fantastic. Before we go, if people want to stalk you on the internet, Where's the best place to find you?
For me, go to Facebook and put in Richard Fox Author, and I'll pop right up. I'm very active on that. And then just go to Amazon and type in Richard Fox, and you'll see all my books right there for you.
Right on. John?
Yeah, same. I'm John De La Rose on Facebook. I'm John De La Rose on Amazon. Pretty easy to find. I got a blog that a lot of people read, delarose.com. And yeah, I'm all over, man.
Fantastic. Gentlemen, I want to say thank you so much for allowing me to take an hour of your time so early in the morning. And hopefully the coffee was flowing. There we go. On behalf of the BAM Podcast and the Indie Creator Spotlight and my dog, who is very aggravated at me right now, I just want to say it has been an absolute privilege to speak to you. He's trying to get a word in edgewise. To speak to you both. And I can't wait to see what the Ember War does.
Thanks for having me. Wonderful being here, and pleasure answering all your questions.
Now, if my dog wants to aggravate you again, come here, you. If my dog wants to aggravate you again, and possibly for the next campaign, would it be okay if we contact you guys again and have you on a bigger roundtable?
Please,
all for it.
Oh my God, that's amazing! Thank you so much. And this has been Walt for the Banff Podcast, and if I can get through my dog to kick the button, we're out.